better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
Live and just a couple minutes early, not a big deal, I expect, because we always have housekeeping to do, and that gives people plenty of time to come on into the live stream. If you're watching on the live stream, of course, the vast majority of people only get the audio version. Today will be a good show if you're only getting the audio version. You will get to see me here, but I don't have a lot of visual aids or anything like that today. A few, but not a lot. Sometimes it really does behoove people to come and check out parts of the video anyway, because of certain things we cover in detail, graphs and stuff like that. Today will be really kind of two shows in one. So there's just too much weird shit going on with this second assassination attempt on Trump. But in a weird way, unfortunately, it fits with the main topic today. The main topic today is how to make big decisions in your life where you really like, I don't know to do this thing or not do this thing, but I do know this. It's going to be a big impact on my life. Either I'm going to miss an opportunity, or if I do it, there are certain negative things that could come of it, and I'm not sure what to do. So this is not do I buy the blue shoes or the purple shoes, right? No, not like that. We're talking about, you know, do I take this new job? Do I pull up roots and move somewhere else? Do I homeschool my kids would be an example of a pretty big decision. Do I buy the new car now or do I wait another year? Do I sell the stock or do I hold the stock? Like things that actually have a long-term impact on your life, and that kind of once you pull the trigger, unpulling the trigger is impossible or at least difficult. It's not without expense or cost or time. So those big decisions. Now, you may wonder, well, how the hell does the Trump assassination attempts, plural, I think when I get done with the little piece I have on that today and explain it, it'll make sense. If I explain it now, it won't. You'll just have to trust me. Now, if you're not watching me live and you don't care about the Trump shit, I'll have no hurt feelings if you jump ahead probably about 25, 30 minutes into today's episode and skip ahead to just the part on decision making. I won't even know unless you tell me. And if you tell me, I won't care. My feelings are not that easily influenced. But we're also going to talk a little bit in the transition today about this new study. And I just heard about it today on the news. And I looked it up and it's real. A new study says that official adulthood, like when we actually become adults, is now at age 27. That has to do with this topic as well, because you might think, oh, this is motivational Jack. This is Zig Ziglar Jack. He's going to be all kind and warm and fuzzy today. At least when he gets past, you know, the Trump stuff, he's going to help us figure out how to make decisions. Yeah, with a 2x4 smack right between the eyeballs before we get into the process. I will be off the top rope, you know, 1986 Randy Macho Man Savage, elbow to the forehead a little bit today. And this idea that a freaking 26-year-old person is still a child and should be accommodated as such is part of the problem as to why people cannot make decisions. And when I get to that part of the show today, I think for many of you, it will make perfect sense. And if it doesn't, you might find yourself feeling a little uncomfortable. That might be because I'm talking about you. We'll see when we get there. Anyway, before we do that, let's hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, life is too short for average, so you should be eating some of the best, most delicious, and nutritious food possible. And you can find that at Anton's Land of Biltong, where you can find Biltong, Biltong sticks as well. You can also get dry sausages like Duars, which are some of my favorite, and Cabanossi, which is really like one of the greatest little dry sausages ever made. I may actually ask Anton to switch my Duars in my bi-monthly shipment to the Cabanossi, because those things are just amazing. But I love Anton's Biltong, and I have made Biltong for a long time. I first started telling you guys how to make Biltong in 2008. I learned how to make Biltong from Peter Hathaway Capstick in one of his very early books that I read back in the 90s. So I go a long way back with real South African style Biltong, and Anton has nailed it so perfectly. Honest to God, with getting shipments in the mail, I barely even make it anymore. If you try this stuff, you'll see why. And remember, TSP 24. Anton will be presenting on how to make biltong and bringing biltong to sample, and I'm sure plenty to sell to TSP 24. So we'll talk more about that in just a second. Next up today, though, the Wealthsteading podcast with John Pugliano. John is a prepper. He is a ham radio operator. He is a member of our expert council. He's also an amazing financial manager. He's been doing that job as a financial manager now for, I guess, about 15 years. He was actually just, when I was starting out, I met John at a prepper expo in Salt Lake City, Utah. He told me he was about to leave his career behind and go be what I was calling at the time, and I still do with some people, a financial liar, because I think the people that work for like Amex and shit like that, that, you know, sell the dream and basically give you a pie chart and say, just stick your money here, they are financial liars. They have no idea what they're doing. They just take a risk assessment profile, and then the company spits out a sheet, and they just throw you in a bunch of funds. John actually actively manages money. He made himself a liquid millionaire before he decided that it was, you know, acceptable for him to manage other people's money. His latest episode is called Manufacturing Recession, 2 years and Counting, and that probably means since it came out on September 8th, a new episode will be out soon. So you should check out wealthsteading.com, where you can learn to grow your wealth like you grow a garden, and learn from one of the best in the business, in my opinion, and that is John Pugliano. Next up, real quick before we move on, just a quick reminder. I mentioned it, but I'm going to really mention it now. TSP 24 Workshop, which will be in November this year. All the details are available on a post at thesurvivalpodcast.com. You can jump over there right now, even if we're live. Scroll down. You'll see this post that I have on the screen. Everybody else, you can find it easily enough. But the big announcement today, it is Saturday, this coming Saturday, that we will be launching the ticket sales. And this is like trying to get into a rock concert, even though there's nowhere near as many people. That's why, though, because the tickets are going to sell out. And I mean, they are going to sell out fast. And I know they will because they do every year. How long? It could take half an hour. It could take 15 minutes. It could be like some years where it's 5 minutes. It could be like last year where it's 2.5 minutes. You just never know. I do know that people that get up and are ready to go generally get in, and people that are not there when we drop the link generally don't get in. There's a lot of detail this year, but the most important thing right now, if you want to come, Saturday, September 21st at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, I will drop the link in the Telegram channel. That will also go to the group. If you are not on that, you are not going to get a ticket 99% of the time. If that goes 10 minutes, then I throw it out on the blog. I would get on either the group or the channel and get signed up really quick because, again, I know I sound like a broken record, but I do not do this for marketing purposes, right? I do this so that I don't feel guilty when you email me angry because you didn't get a ticket. Just, again, I've been doing it since we did our first one when we moved here in 2013. First year, we did 4 workshops. Then we did a couple years, we did 3. For a long time, we did 2 every year, spring and a fall. About 7 years ago, we went to doing them only in the fall. Maybe 6 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that, only in the fall. And so we've done collectively probably 30 of these, and we've sold out every single one of them. Every single one of them, except for the one Stephen Harris did. And there's, I just say there's a reason for that. All right, so with that, let's go ahead and dive on in today. Again, we're starting off with just, I'm going to kind of go lightning round quick on this Trump assassination shit. And I am going to try to explain the link that it has to making major life decisions, especially if they are career-based, geography, et cetera, in today's, you know, macro view. So here's some things that we've learned. Now, this is not going to be exhaustive. I'm not going to do what I did during the first assassination attempt because I had lots of video evidence and photographic evidence. These are just things that have happened. And what I really want you to take away is the mood of the country, not so much just what happened. So first of all, the suspect in this case was on the FBI's radar since 2019. Well, that's one thing. But he wasn't just on the radar. He had a criminal record, and he was a convicted felon. And as a convicted felon, he cannot own a gun. And the way he got on the radar in 2019 is a neighbor called and was worried about him brandishing fucking weapons. So when I mentioned this on, like, I think it was X, people said, well, you don't support red flag laws, do you? Just because he made a, somebody complained about him or made a post or something, he shouldn't have his guns taken. He's not supposed to be having guns. Okay? And this was not like everybody that has an X account is on the FBI radar. This isn't that they were aware of his existence. They literally interviewed the guy. Okay? And again, convicted felon, reported by neighbors for being kind of eccentric, violent, acting, and having weapons when he's not supposed to. Right? You can disagree with the law that says a felon can't own a weapon, but we're talking about the FBI here. They're not supposed to be doing that. All right? He donated to Democrats, they say 19 times. Well, that means at least 19 times. That means public records indicate this man wrote 19 checks to various Democrat candidates, and he had a Harris Walt sticker on his vehicle. That's not so big a deal in of itself, but the leftist media keeps insinuating that this guy is some kind of Trump supporter that went wacky. Joy Reid said he is a white male Trump supporter. She said that about the cooks that got his head blown off, too. That's what I know she's the garbage bin of garbage bins, but there's a lot of influence that these people have, and that's what's important. This guy that they arrested, there's a picture of him with like a major Biden official. I can't remember the guy's name, but there's him and the guy standing together in D.C. That alone doesn't prove anything, but it's not the kind of optic you'd really like to have if you were the Democrat Party. You'd think anyway. He's dead broke. Like he owns a roofing business. He's a freaking day worker, freaking roofing contractor type guy. He has $400 in his bank account, but somehow this asshole flew from Hawaii to DC to Florida. Okay. He also flew over to Ukraine and back. He got kicked off a plane once because he was wearing a t-shirt that said future assassin on it. And he's on the fucking radar of the FBI since 2019. He's got a litany of like ranting, raving, unhinged posts about how horrible Trump and the Republicans are. He's a convicted felon. He's been reported for having guns. He's walking around in a shirt that says future assassin. Oh, we can't figure this out. He actively recruited mercenaries to go fight in Ukraine. Now, I always find this interesting, people like that. Where the fuck are you? Why aren't you going? Get your AK-47 with the serial number burned off of it and take your ass to you. No, you want other people to do it. Very few people, by the way, knew about Trump's golf trip. You know, a lot of times when a president or former president or a major, you know, like once nominated as party nominee candidate, like when they do something, it's announced well in advance. This was kind of one of these last minute, hey, I feel like playing golf today and I'm fucking rich and I'm tired of everybody giving me shit, so I'm going to go play golf. So this decision was made the day before he went to play the round of golf. But somehow this fucker is in the woods 1-2 o'clock in the morning, something like that, setting up his nest. How did he even know Trump was going to be there? Somebody told him. Somebody, I'm not saying who. And it could be on either side. Like you can have double agents and shit, right? So, but somebody told this guy. It wasn't like it was announced. It wasn't like it was put out on a website or something. People say nobody knew. Hey, people know. But somebody had to tell this guy. Somehow this guy had information fed to him. Trump's going to be at this golf course during this time. And he went in way early. And there wasn't much lag, right? And Erica says, why wasn't the news live streaming Trump golfing? Because, again, it wasn't a publicity thing. It was just a guy that likes to play golf going to play golf, probably, again, because he's tired of all the shit going on. And when you have a hobby, that's your release. That's all I think this was. We tend to forget that all these people in the end are just people. And they all have the same, like, outlets and neurosis and everything else we have. They're just people. They put their pants on one leg at a time, et cetera. I think a guy just wanted to play golf. My point is, no one really knew that was going to happen, but this guy set up a sniper nest with an AK-47 with an optic at 2 o'clock in the morning, the early in the morning before it happens. Somebody had to tell him. And the leftist media, again, I told you what Joy Reid said, but she's like the garbage of the garbage. The way I look at people like Joy Reid, so there's when you pull a garbage bag out of a can that gets used a lot of times cans, the bags leak.
and then flies invade the can, and underneath the bag is like a layer of scum and a layer of maggots, and under that is maggot shit. Under that is people like Joy Reid. I'm sorry. Like, just the scum of the earth. But the overall leftist media continues to blame Trump and spew violent rhetoric. Hillary Clinton was on, I don't know which channel, MSNBC, CNN, one of the scumbag channels. The day after, somebody tries to kill this man for the second time in less than 3 months, just to drive it home. And she's using the same rhetoric. He's a threat to democracy. He's a threat to the American way of life. He's going to be a dictator. I can't figure out why people are still trying to kill the guy. There's a certain level that when a person gets to with influence, like a presidential candidate, a United States senator, a sitting president, a vice president, a major news anchor at a major network, where one should consider the impact of their fucking words before they say them. And all of these people are well past that. My pay grade is way below all these people. I still think about what I say. I might say things that upset you or piss you off, but I never say anything that would indicate that it would be a good idea for you to do harm to somebody. I always try to we need to not choose a path of violence because the state loves violence because the state's primary weapon is violence. So you never initiate conflict with your enemy where they're strong. You initiate it where they're weak. That's why they hate memes and humor and when we mock them. And they hate when we figure out how to work the system where we can go, look what we're doing. They go, you're not supposed to do that. We go, fuck off, do something about it. And they can't. That's how we fight the state. Parallel societies, private member associations, peace, and mocking. That's how we fight them. But no, they are scum. They're scum. And that's what I want you to take away from this. This is what it has to do with today's discussion. I think when you're making a life decision in the macro, you should think of the context of where you're living and what the future of the place you're living in looks like. This is not the political discourse that I grew up with. It was heated. People yelled at each other. People exaggerated, all that shit. Okay. But this is not because we disagree about policy. This is pure evil. This is evil run amok. There is no way that if this was coming from the right, that it would be considered tolerable and allowed to happen. This tells you who the people that are actually running the show are. They are evil. Full on evil. And I'm completely aware your average dopey Democrat on the street, your average libtard, thinks that about the right. I'm not talking about those dopey, useful idiots. I'm talking about the people that are pushing the buttons, pulling the strings, and setting the programming and setting the agenda inside the government and inside the media. These people know what they're doing. They know they're lying. They continue this shit, the Fine People hoax, the bloodbath hoax, all of this. And that is to say that this country, as I said yesterday, is headed for best case scenario, a total fourth, turning style unraveling and a need to rebuild that could involve a war or not. Worst case scenario, like a meltdown, apocalyptic, localized civil war or even some sort of global conflict because these fuckers are doing it. And you can, we're going to fight them. We're going to hold them accountable. Like, no, you're not going to do any of that shit. You're not going to control this. Even if the orange man gets back in, you might get a reprieve for a while with a few things. Some things might get a little bit better. It's the only way right now that things will get any better at all. And it's still not going to fix your problem. Do you think these people are going to go away because he wins? They're going to be like, oh, I'm going to throw up their hands and quit? Like, that's not going to happen. You think $35 trillion in debt is just going to magically blow the fuck away because Trump's president again? You think any of that shit's going to happen? It's not. And do you think any of this rhetoric is going to get less violent, less angry, right? The first thing they're going to do the day he gets elected, if he gets reelected, is try to impeach him before he's even in office. Bet it. Bet on it. I dare you to bet on that. They're going to resurrect the articles of impeachment from January when he had like 6 days less than the office and they impeached him for that. That's what they're going to do. That's why they did it. So it's not going to get any better. So what I'm saying is you should look around you as we get into this concept of making decisions in your life. And you should realize the bigger the city you're in and the bluer the area you're in, the worst this is all going to get. And I mean that. I know I've been saying get out, get out, get out of the cities for a long time, especially the flashpoint cities and their beltway suburbs. This has gone to a point that even 2 or 3 years ago, if you told me it would get this bad, I would have told you no. I would have told you no. Come on. Come on. We're not going to have people openly calling for violence of a former president a day after somebody tried to kill him. Well, that wasn't really violence. What the fuck do you think you're saying when you use words like he's literally Hitler, he's going to be a dictator, he'll never leave office, the Supreme Court said he can do anything he wants, all of which is bullshit. But how many people believe it? How many people does it take to cause a problem? How many deranged, fucked up people does it take to cause a problem? The answer, surprisingly, is like one. It was one person that almost killed Trump a few months ago. And it was one person almost killed Trump a day or 2 days ago. Think of how many horrible tragedies have been caused by one person. Now take a million lunatics who believe this bullshit. That, by the way, is a sandbag number. There's way more than a million of these people who believe this bullshit, and they don't know anything, and that makes them dangerous. These people that are tweaked out, you go, if you watch interviews of these people, I know there's some engagement farming and all there, but they honestly don't know anything. I've talked to them. You've talked to them. They have this issue that is the most important thing in the world to them, and it's the end of the world if we don't do it the way that the left says it has to be done. And you say, well, tell me about it. They don't know a fucking thing. They don't know anything. If you start drilling down and say, explain this to me, they say shit like, I don't really know. I need to do more research. I'm not comfortable with this. But you were just shrieking like a lunatic about something you admittedly know nothing about. That this is Bonhoeffer's theory of stupidity. And remember where Bonhoeffer's theory of stupidity came from. Nazi Germany prior to the full rise to power of the Nazis. That's when Bonhoeffer started his work. He could see it coming, and he said, this is highly dangerous. This is way more dangerous than dealing with violent people, because a violent person can be resisted with violence. A stupid people in large numbers are very difficult to resist in any way. You get the crowd on your side, and you make everything go absolutely nuts. Hoge says, until the media is held accountable, it will still continue to go down the spiral road. Okay, let me tell you when the media is going to be held accountable, bro. Never. The media will never. Who's going to hold them accountable? The government that they're running interference for? Trump? You watch. If he gets in, he's going to go soft almost immediately. All this talk of being a dictator and throwing journalists in jail, he won't do what he totally has a legal right to do. Remember, lock her up. Lock her up. I'm going to employ a special counsel, and we're going to look in. Like, the Clintons committed felony after felony after felony after felony. What did he say 2 days after the election? They're nice people. I don't want to hurt them. It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. But what you're seeing is real. Okay, so as we go into this topic, think about this in your life about, do you live in a place that you would want to live in if this gets much worse? Many of you would say, this is the best I can find. And some of you would say, I don't know. I don't know. Just saying. Bring that up. And I could not talk about this given how big of an influence this is going to have on our lives going forward, one way or another. I'm going to tell you, I think it's a 50-50 shot that somebody pulls off an assassination attempt on the guy before the election. I really do. And that could cause a cascade in a civil war. Because at this point, people are rightfully pissed. Let's talk about another thing, though, as we transition here today. And that is this study. Do you need a study to tell you shit like this? It's at studyfinds.com. Time to grow up. Survey claims real age of adulthood begins at 27. And there's Mr. and Mrs. Karen, all upset because their baby boy, who looks like he's about 30 to me, is on his phone dicking off in the house instead of going off and getting a job. You might also wonder, well, what does this have to do with making decisions about your life? I think one of the things you need to understand, if you want to be able to make decisions when they're real, important, life-changing decisions, is the main reason people have a hard time doing it. And it's not just this, but this is part of the problem. You're 20-something years old. You're 22, 23 years old. think of what you can do at that age. You can tell your parents, go screw, I don't want anything to do with you, and there's nothing they can do about it. You could enter into a contract of anything that is legal that anybody else could do. You do all that at 18, by the way, right? You can, if you went to college, get out of college at, let's say, you know, 22 years of age, and if you're an athlete, you could sign a six-year contract at 22 that's completely legally enforceable to play football or basketball for a pro team for millions of dollars. And according to this study, when that six-year contract ends, you're not an adult yet. You can vote, you can drink, you can travel internationally. There is no thing that anybody can do in our society that by the time you're 21 years old, you can't. Like, you, once you turn 21, what's next? What do you get? Like, it's a little, it's hard to rent a car, I guess, if you're under 25. And your car insurance rates typically go down at 25 for whatever reason. That's when they think you're no longer going to drive 1,000 miles an hour in a Buick Electra or what backwards, right? But not much changes. 21, you can do anything, and 90% of what people can do, you can do at 18. Okay? But now you're not an adult till you're 27. And if you read this article, and I'll put a link to it in the notes, you'll find all these different identifiers that these adult adolescents say is what makes them feel that they're an adult. One of the primary ones is paying all your own bills. Great, so I was an adult at 16. No shit. That's what that would mean. There's things like just not living at home makes you an adult. Getting your first real job makes you. There's a whole list of shit, and it'll vacillate anywhere between like 30 and 60% of respondents agreed this is what makes you an adult. Do you know what makes you an adult? Being able to make a fucking decision for yourself without running to mommy or daddy every time you need to make a decision. Being able to open a fucking bottle of aspirin and go, says, take two and take two. And I call your mom first and saying, hey, I got a headache. Should I take aspirin? Simple shit like that is like at least required to enter adulthood. Being able to make a decision for yourself, and this is the important part, and own the result, that's adulthood. That's adulthood. So, one of the things that I have noticed is that a lot of people, when they're at a place of decision like this, and I want to be clear before I go on, there is nothing wrong with talking to like your best friend, or if it's about a certain thing and you know somebody that's very switched on to the technology or the profession or the area, if you're thinking about moving and you know somebody that lives in that area, talking to them. Like, I'm not saying that, but I know you guys have met people like this too. They talk to 30 people to make this decision. Inevitably, what most of the, or they talk to like people that don't know anything about it, but they are respected in their family or their community. But yet they don't know anything about the actual subject. What these people inevitably are doing, and I think a lot of times it is subconscious. So I don't want to pick, I said you're going to get 2x4. I want to mitigate it a little bit. I don't think it's necessarily intentional. But I do think inside they know what they're doing. They're deferring responsibility for whatever choice they make to the people that they talk to. And this is why I don't really like having discussions like this with people, unless I know them really well, and I know that I'm dealing with somebody who's asking my genuine opinion, and they're going to walk away, and whether they take it or not, I'm not held accountable for what they decided to do in their life, and that's a very rare person, honestly. It really is. And I've known people, you know, that I really loved and appreciated, but they never got over this. You know, I had a family member one time that was looking to buy a truck. And his daughters, when they were young, and like his daughters are grown and gone, right? And they always wanted him to have a pickup truck. And so he buys the truck and then decides he doesn't like the truck. He said, but my girls always wanted me to have a truck. Like, yeah, well, they were like 12. Like, you're an adult now. And he came to me when he was negotiating on the truck, and he was totally being given a too high level of a price. I went in 10 minutes and got like $4,000 off this vehicle. And he said, should I buy it? And I said, I'm not going to tell you to buy it or not. I'm telling you if the price they're asking now is fair for the vehicle they're selling you now. But also when he decided he didn't like owning a truck, I told him to buy it. I didn't tell him to buy it. And there's a lot of that. And that has to do with this inability of people to truly grow into what adulthood means. And frankly, may I say, 17, 18, 19 years of age is where the majority of that should have occurred already, already happened. I do believe, especially in males, there is development of the frontal cortex that goes on till about the age of 25, and it leads us to make maybe not the best decisions between about 18 and 25. But it's only because we allow ourselves to be impulsive. If we're a generally intelligent person with an IQ somewhere near 100, we should be able to get past that when we choose to, instead of letting, like, you know, young testosterone-laden male energy overtake us. We generally can still make good decisions at that point. And the kind of decisions we're talking about today should be well thought out, right? These are not, you know, you get to the edge of a cliff and either you're going to have to fight the people chasing you or jump off the cliff and try to make it. We're not talking about that. We're talking about things like changing your job, changing your career, moving, taking an opportunity, turning down an opportunity, stuff like that. So how do you do this? How do we take this decision that your emotions and feelings are germane to, but they shouldn't be the main driver of it? Go a little bit Vulcan, break it down all logically, you know, and kind of like Joe Friday used to say, just the facts, ma'am. And then how do we retrofit our emotions, our feeling, and our gut back into it? It's actually dead simple, right? Or as the kids say, dead ass, right? Dead ass. It's dead ass simple, right? It's the old, kind of one of the oldest forms of organized decision making known to man. You take a piece of paper and you make a big D on it. You put pro on one side and con on the other. Doesn't even matter what side they go on as long as you can remember, right? And then you make a list of all of the positive aspects of that decision and a list of all the negative aspects of that decision. And here's, if the person is at all serious about this being a complex decision, what we know. There are positives and negatives because if we didn't have both of those, we wouldn't be sitting there staring at it. Now, maybe there are no downsides. And maybe this exercise will help you get past your emotional fears and find that. But in most instances, there's going to be some legitimate downsides and some legitimate upsides to just about any major thing. If I'm moving, I'm going to leave certain people behind. They're probably not all going to come with me. If I choose to stay, whatever opportunity was drawing me there, I'm going to lose. So there are positives and negatives. So you need to make this list as exhaustive as possible. If you think maybe that's so important, put it in there. Write it down. It's a very, very simple process. And wear it out. Write it down. Put it down. Go water the garden. Take the dog for a walk. Go to work for the day. Come home. You know, talk to your friend, whatever. And then come back to the list and look at it and anything else you can add. Work on it for a day or two. This is a decision that's important enough to go through this. It's okay to take a few days to make a choice. When you're like, I think that's it. Now, this is the part where you got to get quick. You can't sit around, I'm not sure. Like, because in the end, the averages will work out for you. Every bullet point you made on both sides, go through, and as though somebody has a gun to your head and you got 2 seconds after you read that line to put a number down, you better put a number down or you're going to get shot. You handle it that way. If it is an item that, now that you think about it, is not really that important, but it was important enough to put there in the first place, you thought of it, give it a 1. If it's kind of important, but it's not hugely important to you, give it a 2. If it's a thing that you're like, this is incredibly important, this is as important as a thing can be, give it a 3. Once you're done with that, add up both sides of the list and look at the difference. It's probably not going to be like 50-51. It's probably going to be weighted 75-80% in one direction. Does that mean that's what you should do? Not necessarily, but that's probably the way you should be leaning at that point. You see how simple that is? And when I've talked about this with people, this is why I hate doing this, by the way. I get people all the time, they want mentorship, they want counseling, right? They want consulting. And by the way, consulting and counseling are different. Consulting is, I've analyzed your situation, this is what you should do. You can't counsel a person that way. You see the difference? Consulting is like you're running a business, and I know business operations, and I know revenue models, and I know yours sucks, and here's the best I can make it, so this is what you should do. I can confidently make a recommendation like that. Should you hire 4 employees or 8? We can look at financials, projections, et cetera, and we can determine that maybe you should hire none, right? Or you should hire two and see how that goes and see if you're any good at employees because these are your first ones. Like, there's all kinds of things we could do as a consultant. I hate that, too, because generally people pay for it, they're happy about it, and they don't do it, right? But counseling is more leading a person to their own decisions. A good counselor would never tell, like a psychiatrist or just like an emotional counselor, would never tell somebody, you should do these three things. Because that person needs the ability to discover for themselves where they're heading, right? And that can only be done as a guide. And so what I just gave you is a guide. It's nothing more. It doesn't. Now, if that motherfucker's like, you got like 90% of the points on one side and 10% of the points on the other, then you probably already knew what the answer was. You just weren't comfortable choosing it, right? So now then we have to take, like I said, well, that's not just it, right? Because you could be very close to balanced, right? You'd be like, I'm only 10% ahead on yes, or I'm only 10% ahead on no, to drill it down. And even if you're pretty weighted to one side, if your gut now is still saying, I don't know, here's the next part of this equation. What is the best result possible of doing it? And what is the best result possible if I don't do it? Like, go ahead into fantasy land. Like, if home run hits, if everything works the way I expect it to, what is the best possible result? Then the next question, and it's always good to do the best one first because it gets your mind working and it's easier to foresee. What is the worst result possible? What is the worst result possible? If you were moving, would you effectively be stuck or would you be able to move back? And that answer is different in every situation. How far are you moving? How much income do you have? Why are you moving? Like, what's the market like where you're going? What's the market like where you would be coming back to? Like, I don't pretend to know the answer to that. I'm not saying that when you ask the question, what's the worst thing that could happen, that it's not a big deal, but it might not be a big deal. I've seen that plenty of times. I don't know. I don't know. What's the worst that could happen? I don't know. Why don't you think about that and come back to me when you have an answer? And two things happen. They come back to you with all this little piddly shit, right? And they're like, I think I should probably do this. And they want you to tell them, yes, you should. I will not do that. Because it's not right for me to make a decision for you. We make decisions for our children, not our adult offspring. Okay? You could even say, if it was me, what I would do is, but I only do that with a person that's really emotionally stable and I still know is going to do what they most want and not tell me I told them to do it. Because what I would do and what you would do in identical situations might be very, very different. It might be helpful for you to know why I would do and what I would do, you know, why I would do it and what I would do. But it doesn't mean that that means that's what you should do. I'm 52. Are you 52? I have money. Do you have money? I have family here that I care about and nowhere else. Is that you? Or do you have family somewhere else you also care about? I'm very happy in my life. Are you? Are you making the change only because you're unhappy? Because that can be bad, too. So how can I tell you what to do? I have to guide you like a counselor in this. And since I'm not going to be there to hold your hand and do it, I'm trying to give you the tools to take this journey on your own. It's really not that hard. So you need to think of the best and worst possible results. Write them down if you need to. And then say to yourself, this worst result that I've created for myself, is it really even possibly that bad? Because I find that people would create these incredibly stupidly bad scenarios that, like, you know, you could get hit by an asteroid tomorrow, too, but you're probably not gonna. Like, is it a realistic worst case? And if it is, then, okay, then we need to consider it. And is it a realistic best case scenario? Because that's when people really tend to oversell themselves on how great it will be. And here's the number I like to give people, 75. 75. If you think it would change your happiness, you know, to a 10, it's probably a 7.5. Is that better than what you have? Because it's probably it could be a 10, but it's probably a 7.5. If it's a financial situation, like, well, if I move and I have this new income, and if it's not like a guaranteed salary or anything, and even then you might want to do the 75 anyway, because You can always take a new job with a guaranteed pay and it can go away. I took a job at the turn of the century going into the year 2000 and we moved to Pennsylvania. They paid relocation. They gave me a guarantee, all kinds of shit. And literally my wife was unpacking our boxes after the truck came and dropped everything off. And my boss called me and said, we were just bought out. And I said, what does it mean? And she was a very honest lady. And she said, right now, I don't know. I joined a company with 540 people in it. And 3 months later, I was one of 12 people left. And it was a miserable existence until I was gone for good. It wasn't it's like you can't ever be sure of anything is what I'm getting at. But if it's like, well, I think the income I can make by running this business here is $100,000, you better be able to make the numbers work at 75. Put in a 25% failure factor. If you say I'm going to need 10 hours to do something, right, then add 25% and figure it's like 12 and a half. It's just a good way to build into a system, into a plan, some wiggle room. Because we always overestimate our odds of success, and we tend to overestimate our odds of failure at the same time. So once you have all of that done, it actually can be go from being a very murky, I'm not really sure what I should do here, right? I'm not really sure what I should do here, to it's actually pretty clear what my gut, my desires, my hopes, and the logical outlook are all steering me in this direction. And no one's immune to this. You know, I mentioned moving to Pennsylvania, all that shit, right? So my son did settle in. He made some friends. There was some downside to coming back here to Texas after that. But there was really no good outlook if I stayed there other than going back on the road. Like, I had people calling me, if you want a job, we'll give you a job. But I would go back on the road. And honestly, it was more on the road than I already had been, which was part of what made me miserable. And so I started looking for a job back here in Texas, and we put the house up for sale and all. While this is going on, my wife mentions to one of her former coworkers, we're probably moving back. Boom. Immediately her boss calls her and goes, if you're moving back and you want your job, it's here. I go for an interview. I actually flew down to Texas from Pennsylvania for an interview. I go in, the company loves me. They ask me for some references. One of the references I give them is the man that I worked for before I left Texas. They call him. He calls me at 10:30 at night. Now, he's in California, so it's earlier for him. 10:30 at night, my phone rings. Back when we still had phones on the wall in the house. I answer the phone. It's Frank. He says, I gave you a great reference. So I want you to understand that. They're probably going to make you an offer. But if you would like your old job back, it's waiting for you. The guy that has it, I'm not happy with. I'll kick his ass right out and hand it to you. I said, I need a day to think about it, thought about it, talk to the other company. Was very comfortable working for this guy, took the job back. So we left. 3 years later, we're coming back. We both have our jobs back. Like, we're reinserted. We find a house a mile away from where we used to live. Matthew's friends from here are still close to him. And my wife's still not sure if we should do it. My sister-in-law says, her younger sister says to her, so if God picked up your house and moved it for you, would that be a sign that this is the right thing to do? So, and I love my wife. I'm not picking on her. I'm just saying that we all get into these places where we let our emotions cloud what logically makes sense for our lives. And it's not that our emotions are not important. It's not that our feelings are not important. And it's certainly not that our instincts are not important. I am big on instinct. When my gut says, Jack, don't you do that. I have overcome that instinct enough in my life and burned the shit out of myself every single time, it seems. Maybe 9 out of 10 times, if you go, like, your instinct says no. And you analyze it, and it's not some sort of irrational fear or something like that, you probably shouldn't do it. If you're going to say something and there's a piece of you that says maybe I shouldn't say this, and that's one I've had to reel in, as you might imagine, right? A few times, and you say it, you almost instantly go, oh, well, it's one thing if you do that, and it can be very damaging to relationships and all, but when you decide to make a move, like geographically across 10 states, And it turns out it was a bad idea. It's a little bit hard to just like flip the switch back. It won't always work out the way that it did for us, you know. Now, here's some things to know about decisions like this. There is a fallacy that people live with for the majority of their lives, and by the time most people figure it out, it's too late. And that fallacy is, but later, when I have more money and more income and my life is more stable, it will be easier to do fill in the blank, to travel, to change careers, to take a gap year off and go backpack, whatever it is, right? It will get easier when I'm older because I look at the people around me who are older and they have more stuff, which means they have more money, and people with more money have more freedom. And the problem with that flawed logic is there's a lot of fact in it. People with more money do have more freedom, but a lot of times the people you're looking at when you're a young dumbass, they don't have more money. They have more income, and they have more stuff, but they don't have any more money. If you look at their finances, like, they're literally a couple paychecks from poverty, just like the young person starting out. The difference is they have a house, they have two car payments, they have a kid in school, they have another kid in school, they have soccer games and baseball games and all these things tying them up. They're trying to get another promotion at work, which will never really do what they think it's going to do. And if they pull back for half a second, it can all crash. They're in the trap. Now, I'm not saying that if you're smart about how you manage your money and your life and your expenses, that when your income goes up, you won't get more freedom. You can, but almost nobody does it. And the reason is people love excuses. And in the words of Richard Bach from Illusions, the best way to avoid responsibility is to do what? To say, I've got responsibilities. The number one way you avoid the real responsibility you have in your life to become the best person you can, to chase your dreams, to develop your life, to find somebody that wants to do it with you, to take the people that want to go with you along the way, is to claim that your responsibilities keep you from doing it when that's your primary responsibility. So know this, it won't get easier. A few years ago, my wife and I went to Asheville, North Carolina on vacation. It's a great trip. Most of the time that we went out and about, so we could have a drink or two, and town was only a little bit away, so it was a cheap Uber ride, right? So we would take Ubers. That way, if we went to dinner, I could have a couple of drinks, and I didn't have to worry about getting a DUI while on vacation. Always bad. That scenario, even worse, right? So it's just easy. Push a button, the car comes and gets you. We meet this girl. She's like 22 years old-ish. She tells us all this stuff. It's not like we were, you know, detectiving her or something. Because I always ask Uber drivers, like, how'd you get started in this? Why do you do it? Do you like it? I just want to know. She's like, well, I got about $40,000 worth of student loan debt. But when I graduated a year ago, I had about $65,000. I don't really know where I want to live yet. I don't really want to know what I want to do yet. So what I'm doing is I'm using, like, the cheap Airbnb options, like, for a room and shit like that, to have a place to live. I have credentials with Lyft and Uber. And so whenever I go to a new place, I can just change where my credentials are. And I drive, and I meet people. And I take the vast majority of the money that I earn, and I take half of it, and I put it in savings for my future, and I take the other half, and I put it on my student loan debt. I'm on track in another 2 years of doing this. I'll either have no debt left on my student loans or almost none. And I'll have a nice nest egg, and I'll have been in a couple dozen cities. I'll have friends and a network, and I'll know where I want to live. And then I'll be able to go there, and I'll still have a way to make some money until I find a career. Okay. Do you think that decision for her to operate that way in her life would have been easier if she immediately got out of school, took a job schlepping coffee, started working her way up in a company, and started building the future? Do you think it would have been easier for her to say, now I want to figure out where I want to be? When would it be the easiest? When you have nothing. When you have nothing, you have very little to lose, but you do have one thing to lose, time. Time is the precious commodity that we allow to rot away because, as I always tell you, The days are long, but the years are short. And trust me, as you start getting older and you start hearing about people dying and you start going, wait, that person's only 21 years older than me. And I used to hear about people that age dying and I didn't even blink because they were old. And now that's me. And even if I'm around them, what will it be like? And at that point, even if I'm going to live to be an old man, I mean, 10, 15 more years after that, boy, the last 10, 15, like it starts to register with you. And here's the thing about losing time. You are going to lose it. It will be spent. We have not orchestrated or engineered our way out of the eating of our timeline yet, and we probably never will. We may make it longer at some point, though for all the claims that we have, we really haven't. We really haven't. When you take away deaths at birth, the average person today only lives a year, roughly, longer than the average person 250 years ago. I did that as an informal study. When I started the show back in 2008, the numbers haven't changed. If anything, they've actually gone down a little bit because of all the chronic health problems that we give ourselves. So if you're thinking, but by the time I'm old, we'll be living to be 120, no, you better not plan on that. You better not plan on that. So you're going to burn that time. And that is the one risk you have when you have otherwise materially nothing. So you better burn that time doing something that builds your future, but not necessarily the way somebody else tells you it should. And if you are like 40 or 50, and this is hitting you really hard because now you're having a self-reflection of all that time you burned and wasted, I hate to be this way. Tough fucking shit. Okay? Tough fucking shit. I'm not going to tell you it's all okay. I'm going to tell you you can still fog a mirror. You're not done yet. Chase your dream now, and you're the person that should be telling the 20-something, fuck off with your complaints and your crying about how hard it is, because I would give anything to be able to have the freedom you have right now in my life. And you'll both look at each other and envy the other. It's irrelevant. It means the square root of fuck all. It doesn't matter. There is no, this is not Star Trek or Marvel. There's no alternate universe where you're all of a sudden going to be 20. Again or something. Nobody's going to give you a pill and it's going to make you live to 150. It is what it is. And now you have to make these decisions with that knowledge. Life is short. Those who risk do tend to get more out of it as long as the risks are not stupid. Stupid risk is aping in on some bullshit stock because your buddy who knows a guy that used to work for Merrill Lynch said to him. That's a stupid risk. Being given a job offer without really considering the ramifications in it, going into your boss's office, taking a crap on his desk and playing his head like a bongo on the way out, that's a stupid risk. Right? I'm going to the extreme to make the point. Stupid risks are not what I'm talking about. When it comes to calculated, level-headed, logical risk-taking, risk takers do better than people that play it safe. Even if at the end of the life they have about the same amount of wealth and money, I guarantee you that the risk taker probably had a lot more adventure and freedom and excitement and joy during the real golden years of your life. Let me tell you what the golden years of your life are. They're probably from about 20 to 60. So you can pretty much do whatever you want, and you're still able to do it. And you could extend that some. Take care of yourself. Work out. Do exercises. Eat right. Don't poison your body too much. But it's, I mean, anybody will tell you, like, there's two points in your life. Tom, from, you know, the guy that runs all the web stuff for me, he sent me a study. I should probably talk about it. But I think, if I remember right, there were two ages in it. About when your aging rapidly accelerates, 44 and 66. 44 and 66. And there's people that can push that a little bit, but it's hardwired into us. So, you know, if you're 67 right now, you might be pissed that I said that, but you also know it's true. But you got a lot of living left to do. You know, unless a meteor drops on you or, you know, you hit by a car, or we all have the possibility one day of finding out from a doctor we have terminal cancer or something. There's none you can do about it. But you should live your life as though there's a lot of living left to do, no matter how old you are. But you should also live it with an understanding that whatever time there is still precious, because it will go fast. I can clearly think about being a 21-year-old guy
that had just moved to Texas, fresh out of the military, working part-time as a bouncer in a bar, hanging out in clubs, having great friends, right? Building my life, being excited about it, even though I was broke. Part of me can go back to that in my head like it was yesterday. I can remember my first really good jobs where I actually started to learn things about data cabling and networks and network management and design, and how I got excited about basically becoming an architect of those networks when I went into sales. I can remember my transition in sales up to that more corporate level, like I talked about with the job in Pennsylvania, selling carrier class. I can remember all that shit. I was in my late 20s, early 30s. When I started this podcast 16 years ago, I was only in my mid-30s. And here I am. I'm a 52-year-old dude still doing a podcast because I found something I loved. You know how that happened? I took a lot of risks along the way, and those risks led me to find what I really wanted to do with my life. Because if you asked me when I was 21 years old and I had just moved here and I thought about going to college, but I didn't, if you went to college, what would you want to do? Most of you, if you've never heard me talk about this before, will have no idea how I would answer that question. You'll be shocked when I do, especially as hard as I am on the education system. The answer was, I wanted to teach. I want to be a teacher. Why didn't I do it? Because everybody told me that I would be a hero that didn't wear a cape, that nobody would really appreciate me, and I would not make any money. And while that's not all true, not making much money was. And I saw a future for myself at an income level that would never happen in education unless I was a bureaucratic ass kisser and became like an administrator, which was, that's not teaching, right? You're an educator. No, you're not. You're a freaking CEO of a corporation that steals money from the public and produces a shitty product. I don't want to do that. Tell me what I do today. Tell me what I'm doing right now. Teaching with total freedom to teach whatever I want to whoever wants to listen. I make a great income at it. And if you don't like it, you don't have to listen. And if you say, I don't like what Jack's saying anymore, I'm not going to support him anymore, I'm not going to buy his stuff or use his links or be his member or whatever, I don't give a fuck. I don't care. Because you took what you needed from what I have to offer, and now it's okay that you go do something else. That's fine. I ended up doing what I always wanted to do by taking risks. By taking risks. I can't tell you how many times people in my family or friends said, that's kind of risky. That's kind of risky. And sometimes I would look at it and go, do you even know what that word means? Remember my brother-in-law? We bought our second house in Arkansas. He said, that's kind of risky. Buy a second house. Like, in what world is my house payment on a house that I can rent or sell or borrow against that's got a payment less than your payment on your SUV a risk? If my house, my second home, is a risk, what is your SUV? Well, I needed to get to work. I didn't ask you what you needed it for. I asked you what risk there was. And this is the problem. This is why people get stalled in decisions. We look at things as being risky, and it's not that there's no risk. It's just there's a pretty minor risk compared to other things we do all the time that are incredibly risky. Wasting our time, wasting our money, wasting our future on things we don't really want to do. That's the risk. And I want to say again here at the end, often when people ask a lot of people for advice before they make a decision, they're looking to offload the responsibility. Consciously or subconsciously doesn't really matter. Your brain doesn't really know the difference of you doing a thing consciously or subconsciously. It just is a computer. It just acts with all the information it has, and how aware you are of like certain processing centers working that information is irrelevant to your brain. It just causes an output. And I've seen so many people that you could just tell when they start asking you for advice, they want you to tell them what to do, and that way they can go do it. And then they can say, but I was done wrong, or somebody told me to do it, or I knew better than to do that, but he said. And that's why I generally do not play that game with people. They have to be people that I have enough of a, you know, personal and professional relationship with. Because it doesn't, when I say professional, it doesn't have to be my employee, right? Because I'll tell an employee, I'll tell you what you're fucking doing today. You're getting that shit done, right? That's what you're doing. That's a different operational mode. What I mean by professionally is that
we have kind of a personal plus a professional level association in that we are aware of each other as individuals at a higher level, right? I understand you as a person, not just because we get along, but I know enough about you that I would, let's say it's professional in that if somebody asked me if I would hire you for a job recommendation, I would say yes, and I would say it without even a second thought. That's the person that I will say, well, this is what I would do, because I know they're gonna hear what I said. They're gonna hear what I said. They're not gonna hear what you should do is. And it's amazing to me how often you tell somebody something and they repeat it and it is so not what you said. You know, I've said things to people like, for instance, I'll get to that, but not today. And they'll say, well, Jack said he'll do it when he's damn good and ready. Those are not the same thing. I don't care what type of intellectual judo you do to try to get there. That's not what I said. And if that can happen, then if I was in your situation, what I would do is, can easily get changed to, but Jack said that what I should do is. No. You know why? I believe in the sovereignty of life. You as a being are the only person who can truly make decisions for you. I have this conversation in reverse with parents all the time. Your children will grow to a certain age where you need to look at them and acknowledge that, because one of the reasons we have 27-year-olds that are not quite grown up yet is because mom and dad, who are sitting there going, I wish Billy would do something. Every time Billy goes to do something, they're telling him he shouldn't do it or he's doing it wrong, right? Or they're telling, even if they're not telling him what he shouldn't be doing, what they're doing is they're telling him what he should be doing. You should do this and you should do that. No, mom and dad, what you should do is you should go figure out your life and stop trying to live vicariously through your children. And if you're one of these people constantly pulling at people for what should I do, you need to stop treating your contemporaries, your friends, and your coworkers like they're your fucking parents. I told you there'd be some 2x4 hitting today, but it's the truth. You have sovereignty over yourself or you don't. And the only way you get sovereignty over yourself is to assert it. And asserting sovereignty comes with responsibilities that many people are no longer comfortable with. And it may not be your fault. Our society has created, I would say, multiple generations at this point. No one gets a pass. You know, sometimes I talk about Gen X and people think, he just thinks Gen X is the greatest ever. Actually, Gen X generally thinks we suck. That's why we took the mantra of Gen X onto ourselves, and we don't care, right? Overall, if you had a slogan for Gen X, we don't care. That's it.
Right.
But I would say boomers forward have this problem in different ways of having this belief that someone else should tell me what to do, and yet still wanting to feel like you're self-sovereign. Well, you get one or the other. When you move out of the house, You get to leave the fucking air conditioner on 60 degrees while you're at work if you want to. You also got to pay the fucking bill. See, that's how that works. That's how sovereignty works. You can go out and buy the sports car, but you have to pay for it. Your parents can't put an app on your phone anymore that says Billy was doing 75 and a 45. You can do 75 and a 45, and you have to pay the ticket and increase the rate of your insurance. And if you hit somebody, you're responsible for what you did to them. See, that's how self-sovereignty works. So what people want is like partial self-sovereignty. So I can still go back to the well, so to say, so I can offload whatever bad choice I make on somebody else. You can't. You can't do it. And so many people are stuck because of this. Once you accept who and what you are, a self-sovereign being, and the responsibility that goes along with that, you have to go through the processes we talked about today. You may have a different way to do it. You may do it all in your head, okay? You may do it all in your head, and you may do it in 10 seconds flat. If you're gifted and you can do that, great. I gave you the exercise of writing the things down and numbering them, because sometimes these are complex, life-altering decisions. They're incredibly complex, life-altering decisions. But in general, when you really analyze them, the blueprint for what is the best choice for you is right there, and you can't be letting your fear or your desire for someone else to hold your hand while you do it take it away from you. We have to seize the opportunities when they come, but we can't grab on the opportunities that are really not opportunities. And again, what should you do? I don't know. You're going to have to figure it out for yourself. You must own your decisions, the good, the bad, and the neutral. And as I end today, you know, I have these tenets of modern survivalism. When it started out, there were 10. Later, I expanded it to 12. That's where I called it, right? And when I expanded it to 12, I moved 10 to 12 so it would go last. And that 12th tenet of modern survivalism is what you do matters. And that has hit people hard enough that I've had more than one person tell me that hearing those words did things like derail a plan for their own suicide. A guy told me he had his gun in his mouth and it would not, he was a veteran, his life was a fucking train wreck, and he heard me say that in his head and it wouldn't go away, it broke my heart and made me feel good at the same time. Like, I'm like, what fucking country are we in where some dude with a podcast saying something that simple is the difference between a guy killing himself and what if I never said it? What if I never took these risks? That was a long time ago. It made what I do real to me. But there's something I've never said to this day that's implied by this, but I should have said it a long time ago. What you do matters, but so does what you don't do. What you don't do matters for the positive or to the negative. What if I didn't start this show? What if I never did this? What if I built a different great life for myself? What if I decided I liked being in the corporate world? I probably would have more money than I do today. I'd probably be a lot fatter if I wasn't dead from a heart attack yet. But I could have built a really great life in that space. I had it made. I was set. By the time I was 34 years old, I was fucking set. How many people have been touched by the work that we do? This is not my ego. I want you to see it in yourself. That's why I'm telling you. That's why I'm being dead honest with you today, right? That's why I'm being open emotionally with you today. I think about this. What if you never did this? How many people came here to a workshop, went home and started a business? The answer is a lot. I bet you if I just threw out a call, anybody that started a business and this show was part of why you did it, send me an email. I could probably sit here for 4 hours just reading the person's name and the business they started in and like two sentences about it. And it would be 4 hours. Some of those would have happened anyway. Many of them wouldn't have. What if that one guy, his name was Dan, pulled the trigger? See, you have this same impact on the world if you choose to. You have the same impact. Everything you do is a butterfly effect. It's something that you'll never see, you'll never touch, because most of what we do, most of what we put out in the world, most of what cascades down and ends up touching somebody 1,000 miles away 10 years later, we never know and they never know us. That's how important this is. And that's why your primary responsibility should be to build yourself into the best person you can be. To put yourself first. To be selfish in the greatest way possible. We've been taught to be selfish is bad. Put yourself first is bad. But then I won't take care of my kid. I won't take care of my spouse. That's going to be the most important thing to you then. Like, I put myself first. But part of putting myself first is I want my wife to be happy. I want my grandkids to have a place to be during the day and not have to go to public school if they don't want to. I want my son to have a great life. I want to see him. I want to see my daughter-in-law. Those are important to me too. I just don't make them excuses. I do have one question. I have a feeling it's right in that vein, so let's hit it and then we'll wrap up. Fred says, what about when your spouse doesn't want you to do regarding a decision about the time you spend homesteading or moving? I'm not sure. I think it's basically a reluctant spouse. I don't know. How would I possibly be able to answer that for Fred? Maybe your spouse doesn't understand how it's important to you. Maybe you're improperly matched. Maybe you need to figure out a way that you both can be happy. I don't know. I'm not Fred. I don't have Fred's wife, right? I think what's important in situations like this, where one spouse has something that's important to them, is communication. For that the spouse on the other end of that to understand, these are why these things are important to me. But I think it's also contingent upon you to understand why she's resisting it. Because it might not just be in her head. It might be, I don't spend enough fucking time with you. Right? That might be why that she's resistant to it. Or she might feel that we're wasting money. And she might be right. Have you done an audit on it? Like, that's something you have to figure out for yourself. Curtis Brown, I'll acknowledge real quick here. $5 super chat. Thank you. Says, thanks, Jack. Been listening since 2012. Big reason for starting with 1/10-acre garden, CSA now, farmsteading and region commodity farming on 900 acres. Bro started with 1/10 acre, formed a CSA, and he's commodity farming 900 acres. I bet you there was some risk taking. I bet you there were some come to Jesus decision moments in that. Good for you, bro. And I got to tell you, if you're ever thinking about doing what I do, don't worry about me. I'm not worried about you competing with me. Go do it. This is the greatest job in the world. People say being a doctor is the greatest job in the world or whatever. No. Getting up in the morning, sitting down, going through all your communications, and getting one or two stories like that every day of your life, that's the greatest fucking job in the world, guys. But it came because there was risk and sacrifice to make it happen. If you wanted to learn how to make decisions today without risk and sacrifice, came in the wrong place, because I will never bullshit you. I will never bullshit, unless it's a joke and it'll be pretty obvious. All right, with that, I want to wrap things up. Let me remind you guys that you can help support the show a variety of ways. One way to do that is to partake in some of the educational curriculum that we put together. We just launched the Backyard Cover Crop and Soil Secrets course. It is currently available. You can go to the Survival Podcast and scroll down and learn more. Just go to homefoodsystems.com. You can see all the courses that are there. We have the composting course. That's $40. We have the Permaculture Principles course. That's free, so you can get a shot at it if you want to just see what we do. And then we've just released the Backyard Cover Crops. This is the most intensive educational program that I've ever put together. It's $80. It's got to be worth $300, guys. It really does. And if you're MSB, it's $65. So make sure you get your discount if you are MSB. The next thing I want to tell you real quick, though, is the item of the day. These are cool as shit. These are Vivor's rechargeable headlamp. These are just badass. I put out a little video with my review today, but they're IPX4 waterproof, which means like rain, sweat, stuff like that, not swimming in a pool with them. They're rechargeable. They're $8 a piece. You got to buy two, though. They're $16 for a two-pack. They come with a charging cable and some other accessories. They work with both a LED bar or a spotlight. They also do some other things, like they have a motion sensor. If you want to be able to just wave your hand to turn the light on, they do that. They also have kind of a signal mode, but they're super lightweight. They weigh 2 ounces. They're USB-C for recharge. That's kind of becoming a de facto standard. And again, $16 for two of them. And with my discount code, you can get another 5% off. I believe that everybody should have a headlamp. For a couple reasons. One, we've all had a flashlight in our teeth or under our arm at some point, and we're miserable about it. This frees your hands. Fishing, camping. I wear this all the time when I go out and about on the property. I've used it for about 2 months before I recommended it because of some quality issues with some of our product, not all. I have taken a lot longer of testing a piece of equipment now before I'll actually do a review on it and recommend it. These are great. $8. Yes, when the battery's dead, when it will no longer take a charge, it's disposable. It's $8. You're not going to buy a good rechargeable battery for much less than that anyway. So these are just fantastic. And again, because they're so small and compact, right in a cargo shirt pocket, in your glove box, in your vehicle, your console, your vehicle, this is the kind of thing you should have all over the place, because they're just that good and just that inexpensive. And that LED light bar, it's a 350 lumen brightness and a 230 degree view. So again, at $8 a piece, I don't know, if you don't want one, don't buy it. Anyway, with that, I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. I hope I wasn't too tough on you guys. I want you to know something. When I do get kind of like off the top rope, Jack, It's because of care. It's not for theatrics and entertainment. It's not because I have anger issues. It's because of care. And when I do get angry is when I see people sacrificing the greatest opportunities that are ever going to come in front of them because they're afraid to take responsibility for themselves. Real quick, somewhere in West Texas says, what was the name of the doctor you had on the other day? Dr. Stephen Lewis, and he is a doctor of chiropractic. And you can go to the website and find that episode if you want to, or here on the YouTube channel. Anyway, guys, tomorrow I don't know what we're doing. Somebody made a bad decision. Somebody put in to be on the show. I agreed to have them on the show, even though they were an unknown quantity. And 2 days before the interview, sent me an email that said, we have some new initiatives, and I'd like to come on after the end of the year if I can do that, because I don't want to do it now. And I said, don't worry, you're not going to be on the air at all. You don't have to worry about that. And so I got stood up for my interview tomorrow. So I don't know. Maybe I'll reach out to an expert council member or something. Maybe I'll do a Just Jack show. But now I do not have a planned show tomorrow, so we'll see how that works out. But it'll be something cool. I promise you. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with something. They're gonna bail you out, just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have.